Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Coming up later this morning, Governor Eliot Spitzer. In a conversation we recorded a short time ago, did he abandon his driver's license plan specifically in time to help Senator Clinton in tonight's Democratic debate?
This is a tough issue, and I think the senator's position that we need comprehensive immigration reform bill that passes through Congress and is signed into law by a president is the right position. One of the things I've learned over the last few weeks watching the debate about this issue is you cannot deal with immigration issues at a state level.
More from Governor Spitzer and your thoughts about his first 11 months in office coming up later. And we will carry that Democratic debate tonight. You'll hear what Senator Clinton has to say when she is no doubt asked about this issue, among many others, tonight on AM 820. But first, Hillary Clinton could soon be the first woman president in the United States, and that is a trail that other women have blazed in other countries. In New York today, 8 current and former female heads of state are gathering, along with 70 other high-level women leaders, for a summit on global security, which will include an attempt to redefine security as about more than just terrorism. We are delighted to have with us now the former Prime Minister of Canada, Kim Campbell, and the current Foreign Minister of Liberia, Olubanke King Akarele. So thank you so much, both of you, for coming on. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Ms. Campbell, what's this summit about? What's your idea of security about?
Well, the idea is to try and broaden the frame of reference for talking about security. And this isn't, I don't think this is something brand new. We don't pretend that we're reinventing the wheel. But it's an opportunity to give a very coherent and clear picture of the interconnectedness of a variety of areas of security. For example, we'll be looking at issues like the responsibility to protect, because we know that so many major conflicts often arise from situations where there are domestic tensions, civil wars, terrible treatment by a population, of a population by a leader.
Environmental stress.
Well, and climate change is another issue that we're looking at as well, because, again, the security implications of that are really enormous. And one of the things that I'm concerned about is that if governments don't address this issue, it may, in fact, undermine people's confidence in governments in a fundamental way that may make demagoguery and that kind of undemocratic leadership more appealing to people if they think that elected governments are not effective in dealing with an issue that's going to dramatically impact all of our lives. The economics of insecurity is one of the issues as well, that when you don't have secure societies, it has a very serious impact on, we know, for example, in terms of energy, that the insecurity in the Middle East now has actually reduced investment, desperately needed investment, in the infrastructure of oil production. And we'll be looking at the issue of preventing terrorism, looking at some of the factors that go into that. So that's kind of a broad brushstroke.
Yeah. So there are all these things that could be called security. Why do you think the word security generally only gets applied to military matters?
Well, I think it does and it doesn't. You know, I think that there are lots of intelligent conversations where people recognize the links. But I think particularly in a post 9/11 world, there has been a focus on violent acts and terrorism and things like that. And because of its very nature, it's not something that's easy to plan for or predict. I mean, its very nature is to be unpredictable. It's not something where treaties and the traditional diplomatic efforts can address it. And so I think it has preoccupied people. But if you actually look at the lives lost to terrorism compared to other threats to society, it's very, very small. So we need to have a broadly based view of security, because if not, we are going to be insecure.
All right. So we are going to open up our phones. I see some people are calling in already, men and women. We are open for both genders on the phone at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post a comment on our comments page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer. show. How do you think that security should be defined? Do you think men and women in government and leadership define security in different ways? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show for our two very special guests to begin the program today, Kim Campbell, the former Prime Minister of Canada, and the current Foreign Minister of Liberia, Olubanke King-Akarele. And Minister King-Akarele, do you think women leaders tend to look at security differently from men?
Let's say that women leaders actually bring a whole new perspective. Let me respond to this issue of security and women. In our sub-region, Liberia, Guinea, and Sierra Leone, those countries are referred to as the Manu River Union countries. It was, in fact, the women of the sub-region that brought to a close the issue of the war that was going on between Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea. They came to their respective heads of states and said, enough is enough. We want all this terror to stop. They were able to intervene with the King of Morocco to start the processes that actually led to peace in the sub-region. For that, the women of the Manu River Union countries, Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea, were actually awarded 2 years ago the United Nations Human Rights Prize. And this stopping of the conflict between the countries were critical, made possible by women. Secondly, the whole issue of maintenance of peace and security in Liberia is directly related to what will happen in Sierra Leone and Guinea. Liberia, a post-conflict country led by Africa's first woman president, Mrs. Ellen Johnson Sirleaf.
The president of your country.
The president of my country, and I am representing her here at this summit because she cannot come. Now, the whole thrust of her reconstruction is fundamentally based on security, because without peace and security, there can be no sustainable development in Liberia and hence in the sub-region.
You know, Minister, there are two strains of feminist thought on women leaders. I think you've just expressed one of them. One says women really are different from men and better for leadership because they're better at building relationships and less inclined to just fight about their differences. I think that may be what you just said happened in the case of your country. The other says it's sexist to point to any group differences, that women will always lose out when you try that. So are you in one camp or the other?
No. Let me clarify for you what those two camps are really saying. It's not that women are different. It is that women bring on the table a different perspective, a different way of doing things. So sexism, in that sense, is not the issue. We, for example, as women leaders, are looking at this issue of what difference does women leadership bring? And that is the critical issue. So it is not a matter of losing out, but it is a matter that we want to see worldwide more women in leadership. Why? Not because of numbers, but in short, what difference does women leadership make in terms of how things are viewed and the solutions? So that is what is critical rather than the perspective of sexism and one would always lose out. It's a non-issue about losing out if you see it from the perspective of that women bring something different to the table. In bringing that something different, women therefore approach the issue of security differently. That's the fundamental issue.
Ms. Campbell, question.
Can I add to that? Because it's also true, women experience the world differently from men.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that happens when we approach issues or crises and we only deal with the man and we only talk to the man, we very often get a totally incomplete solution. And I'll give you an example. I sit on the board of the International Crisis Group. And although this is a group that focuses on particular areas of crisis, We have a thematic approach, which is a gender approach. And it's led by Don Steinberg from our New York office. And he was at the State Department. And Minister King may know him because he was very much involved in the State Department in the early days of trying to resolve the earlier crisis in Sierra Leone. And he said they got a peace agreement, and he was very pleased about it. But it began to fall apart because the women had not been involved for two reasons. One, because it didn't address the problems that women faced, and there were women combatants. There were women. Women were displaced. Women had many of the same issues as men, but these were not addressed, and they needed to be addressed differently. But also, because they were not engaged in the process, he said the peace fell apart. And he feels very passionately about this, that it was a serious omission on the part of the major governments that were involved in trying to resolve this problem, and it led to failure. And so when you talk to him about this, it's not because, you know, he wants to be a good guy or he thinks it's fair and nice and let's be kind to the ladies. It's because it's a fundamental factor in succeeding. And if you exclude one half of the population of a country, or in many of these places more than half the population, not only do you not address the issues of the reality of the lives that these women lead, but you also set yourself up for failure because you don't engage them to play a positive role. You don't. They can be enormously helpful in helping to avoid a recurrence of the violence and the tension. So it's a very hard-nosed, pragmatic view to engage women because they do have leadership capacity, and if you don't involve it, then you're setting yourself up for failure.
So I understand that a practical outcome of this summit in New York with eight former or current female heads of state and 70 other high-level women leaders, one of the practical outcomes is supposed to be to create a new women's diplomacy force. Mm-hmm. So can you explain that idea?
Minister King, do you want to talk about that?
Well, let me just add this. The specifics on that I don't have a handle on, but I would like to add that something that I think you could maybe add on. A new women diplomacy force might not only be seen from the standpoint of what you might call a soldier's. Let me take up from where you left off, Madam Campbell. The women in Sierra Leone and Liberia around the border areas are saying, for example, market women, for us to maintain peace and security in that region, if you come in terms of border controls and close the border from certain times of day, you are preventing us to do our cross-market trade. Therefore, how did this issue of Women in Diplomacy Task Force coming? One variant in terms of the market women who are doing extraordinary trade in the sub-region, they are saying, we, the market women, are prepared to play a role as part of the security dimension of the border areas, so that security in this sense, in terms of the normal way, is not sufficient. Let us come in, and we can then contribute to a kind of diplomacy in terms of the security dimensions, because we need to assure that those borders are open for our market trade. I think this is an interesting dimension that could throw light on the nature of probably what might constitute a new women diplomacy security force. This is what we would contribute from Liberia and the sub-region.
So, Ms. Campbell, let me read you an email that just came in from a listener who says, the discussion these people are putting forward is about a decade out of step. The issue is what in London and Washington and Ottawa we call transnational threats, meaning threats to nations that do not come from other countries or military forces. Even Rumsfeld's Department of Defense established divisions oriented to transnational issues. After all, the largest single responder to the tsunami was the U.S. Navy by far. Why? Because we have incorporated humanitarian crises and climate issues into our national security apparatus. So this discussion is unbelievably out of date. What would you say to that listener?
Well, I think the listener has not understood what we're talking about, because what even the transnational issues that he's talking about still involve state actors. What we're talking about, and I made the point early on that it's not that we're reinventing the wheel, but I think going back to what Minister King was saying, many of the paradigms for looking at how to resolve these issues, whether they're the kinds of civil wars and situations that you have in Sierra Leone or trans-border conflicts or any of these things, is who you see as being productive participants in solving the problem. And part of the problem is that the traditional categories of people who are engaged are often traditional institutions, and very often male-dominated institutions. What we are hoping to do is simply to make more visible the potential of aspects of society, of factors of society, like the cross-border trading women that that Minister King was talking about, that there are potential to play important roles in dealing with many of these security issues. It's a matter of making people visible who are not seen very often by those who are trying to solve problems. And this goes back to Don Steinberg's experience with the American State Department in Sierra Leone and how after he felt very bad that they had really failed to understand that before them there were people who could have been very helpful in ensuring the success of the peace agreement, but because they didn't see them, because they were not being engaged, it wasn't happening. Now, we are not the first group of people to come together to say that women need to be engaged in these issues. The Canadian and British Armed Forces, in their peacekeeping operations, have created a whole training module for peacekeepers on understanding the importance of gender. And some of it is gender sensitivity, but others is understanding the role that women can play in communities in helping to achieve the goals that the peacekeepers are there to achieve. But what we're saying is that we think that this is an opportunity to raise the profile of this and to perhaps take some positive steps to continue the momentum of making sure that we don't miss this extraordinary resource in key issues, and that we understand that in some respects women do experience the world differently from men, which means that they have different needs when you're resolving these conflicts that have to be addressed. I mean, it's, you send the men home with some seeds to plant. Well, that's fine, but that doesn't address the issues of women who are displaced or women who are now heading households or women who have to deal with many of the social problems that come from having left their community.
Right, and when we come back from a break, I want to ask you how what you just said might apply to the threat from Al-Qaeda and such groups around the world. I also want to ask about the worry that some Democrats in this country have that Hillary Clinton seems to be staking out especially tough positions on foreign policy because she's a woman and feels she needs to compensate. And so we'll ask if that's been a challenge for you two as a prime minister and as a foreign minister. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. A reminder that our online video picks for this week are up on our website. Every week we choose five videos from the web that we think you may be interested in, and I anchor them in a picks video. This week's picks include Rudy Giuliani on Charlie Rose in 1996, saying he did not consider himself a Republican mayor. That's our online video picks. Go to WNYC.org and click on video. And we want to incorporate your video picks. Send us a link to a video you want to share. Email Brian Lehrer Show at WNYC.org. Put the word video in the subject line. My guests right now are the former Prime Minister of Canada, Kim Campbell, and the current Foreign Minister of Liberia, Olubanke King Akarele. They are here with eight or so former or current female heads of state, 70 other high-level women leaders from around the world for a summit on global security, which includes an attempt to redefine security as about more than just terrorism and also to establish a global women's diplomacy force. And our phone number is 212-433-WNYC. We will take some phone calls, 212-433-9692, or more to our comments page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Ms. Campbell, I mentioned before the break that some Democrats here worry that Senator Clinton is staking out especially tough positions, like on Iran, because she has to prove her toughness as a woman leader. Did you ever find yourself as prime minister in that position or with that temptation?
Well, It was a different climate when I was prime minister. And in fact, then there was a great deal of interest in capturing the what people thought was the peace dividend.
It was the early 90s, shortly after the Cold War.
1993.
Yeah.
But I was also the first woman defense minister of my country. In fact, I was the first woman defense minister of a NATO country. And the first thing I said when I was sworn in as Minister of National Defense was that it's highly premature to beat our swords into plowshares, that there were, in fact, threats in the world, and that Canada had to do its part in terms of providing military resources, that we are charter members of NATO. We've never been a neutral country. We're very involved and have an honorable and serious history in conflict. However, I think what is important to understand is that your military force is certainly not the answer to most of today's security problems. It's important, and we need to have a readiness, but it isn't the answer. And I think Hillary Clinton's in a very difficult situation because in the post 9/11 world in the United States, I mean, I've been somewhat concerned at the extent to which there are sort of myths and misconceptions about what America's where the risks come from in the United States, and I think it's difficult for any politician to have a kind of nuanced and thoughtful discussion on security issues, mainly because in the context of an election campaign, somebody's going to go after you, and suggest that
that
the old used to be soft on communism,
yes.
Now you're soft on terrorism.
Exactly.
It's a very difficult environment in which to have the kinds of conversations about security that need to take place.
Minister King Akarele, does this come up for you as a foreign minister of Liberia?
Well, as a foreign minister of Liberia, let me say this: the dimension that we are taking in terms of foreign policies and emphasis on economic diplomacy and development diplomacy. What we are doing here is basically bringing on board a new perspective where we are saying that to underline peace and security, we want to stress the economic. Because without that, you go into issue of undermining that very precarious peace and security. This is also going to be pursued within the context of a very exciting program that we are pushing in Liberia jointly with the president of Finland. We are having an international colloquium on women's empowerment, leadership, international peace and security. Now, the former defense minister of Finland, Elisabeth Rehn, is an integral part of that. One of the areas we will be looking at is this very dimension of, for example, how women's leadership would pursue these very kinds of issues you're talking about, how one reacts to this item in terms of being tougher because you're a woman and
yes.
all of that. So we will be looking into some of these very issues to see worldwide what are the permutations, what are the lessons for us on this.
Let's take a phone call. Jim in Morristown. You're on WNYC. Good morning, Jim.
Thank you. Great program.
Thank you.
I have one slight corrective, which is that prime ministers are generally not heads of state. They're heads of government. But it's a great program, and you're discussing important issues. But nobody's mentioned Margaret Thatcher. I mean, when you mention whether women are kinder and gentler in leadership, I mean, you have to consider the case of Margaret Thatcher.
The Iron Lady. And so this summit that you're at, is it sort of a liberal women's leaders summit, Minister King Akarele? Did you invite Secretary of State Rice to join, for example?
Well, this is being managed by Mary Robinson here, but I know that Madeleine Albright is among the participants and a host of others. I'm also aware that the senior advisor, Condoleezza Rice, is here.
She is participating?
Yeah, the senior advisor on women of Condoleezza Rice.
Oh, senior advisor.
I cannot say whether Condoleezza Rice herself will be present. This was organized by the team here in the U.S., Mary Robinson and co.
Yeah, she was invited. The sponsoring organization is the Council of Women World Leaders.
But do you think a conservative like Condi Rice is likely to kind of poo-poo this whole notion of, you know, a women's diplomacy force, whereas some who are more politically on the left would say, yeah, that's what we need?
Well, it's interesting. I don't think so. I'm a conservative also. And it's interesting, if you look at women who've been heads of state and government, and your caller was quite correct, I mean, I was head of government, the Canada's a constitutional
technically
monarchy.
Technically, the queen, yeah.
But if you look at women who have led, I mean, women have not had much chance to lead over the centuries. So when they have, I mean, Elizabeth I led the British in the Battle of the Spanish Armada. She certainly wasn't wimpy on those issues. Margaret Thatcher certainly didn't shy away from using force to establish an important principle of international law in the case of the Falklands. Golda Meir, Indira Gandhi, women like that. When it is needed, and sometimes maybe they do have to overreact. I don't know, but I think that, mm-hmm. that there's. I just think it's sort of silly. I think women are quite understand the need to use the tools necessary to achieve a goal, and it is very disappointing when those tools involve war, and. Because war usually creates as many problems as it solves. And we've just had, I was just back in Canada for November 11th, which is our Remembrance Day, and the television was full of interviews with, you know, veterans from the Second World War, and, all, you know, many of them talking about their experiences and saying, what a terrible thing war is, even though many...
But you're talking about, I think, a different view of what face means and what respect means. Yes?
Well, I think that is the thing that we often think of as culturally, that women perhaps are not socialized in such a hierarchical way as men are, and they don't have the same notion of what it means to be, quote, a man. But they have a more complicated issue as well, because if they are tough, those qualities are often seen as masculine. They're not masculine. Toughness comes in both masculinity and femininity. Toughness is a predisposition necessary to deal with a certain set of circumstances.
Right.
And
not in certain predictable ways.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with your reproductive
right.
system.
Sarah,
in the same way that men can be gentle and kind, and I mean, it has nothing to do with being not being manly. It has to do with the circumstances. It's appropriate to be gentle and kind.
Sarah in Kansas City, you're on WNYC. Hello, Sarah.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I actually wanted to speak to this exact point, which is that I think that when we're looking at involving women's issues in security issues, that it's an incredibly important project. Women have been excluded from this arena, but it's important to look at women's experiences, which there tend to be similarity of experiences of women in society in terms of exclusion versus the diversity of women's perspectives, which can range from very almost militaristic to very peaceful and sort of the softer qualities that people stereotypically think seem to associate with women. So practically and analytically, expecting women to have a particularly peaceful viewpoint, particularly, for example, at the negotiation table, is problematic because you're expecting things from them that they may not be delivering.
Right. And Minister King Akureli, this applies to you, I think, in the area of trade, because I think you've been involved in some very tough trade negotiations, including with the United States, who you think is being too protectionist with some of our farmers and so forth.
Well, let me say this. Until basically 2 months ago, I was Liberia's Minister of Commerce and Industry, and within that context, the particular area that I have been involved in terms of association with the United States is being able to get Liberia accepted under the AGOA, the Africa Growth and Opportunity Act. This was just approved, Liberia's entrance was just approved in January this year by President Bush, for which we are very pleased. Now, what is that act? That act basically permits Africa manufactured goods into the U.S. market duty-free. Now, we in Liberia are only just beginning to get on the ground on that, and it provides an opportunity for new exports. Our traditional exports in Liberia, for example, has been rubber, iron ore, timber. Now we'll be going into things like rubber wood, chilies, etc., so that this would be a way for us in Liberia in terms of the proceeds and revenues mm-hmm. from new income areas filtering down to the farmers. To the small farmers, we have not and are not yet members of the WTO, we are only now submitting our accession request. But certainly what I have been involved in, and now as foreign minister in the economic diplomacy, we will be getting more and more into these very issues you're talking about.
We've just got a few minutes left. And Ms. Campbell, if I might, since you're here and since you were Prime Minister of Canada, you know that the U.S. is now reconsidering its health care system in this presidential campaign. The proposals go in all directions. And really, we're debating the issue of health security. Do you think the Canadian single-payer model would be good for the United States?
Well, it's not clear. You have such a complicated system here. It's not clear whether it's easy to graft it on. And I think there are other countries. I live in France much of the time, and they have a very good health care system, but it's not a single-payer system. It's a series of systems. But I think what Americans should be saying is, why are we paying more for health care and not getting secure health care for everybody when other countries are paying less and everybody's covered? So you guys are paying through the nose for very inadequate health care. You can get the best health care in the world here if you can afford it. But, you know, in Canada, it's just considered, you know, unconscionable that anybody would ever be impoverished
right.
by illness.
But so, there's a trade-off there, right? Because the Canadian system struggles, as all healthcare systems do, with cost and rationing. So in the U.S., the market rations, as you were just saying. In Canada, the government rations. So what are some of the toughest choices you think the Canadian system has had to make?
Well, I think unless you pay 100% of your own health care costs, somebody somewhere is going to be looking to keep costs down. And it's a difficult situation. The advantage of the Canadian system is that there is no profit motive. Nobody is trying to make money from the system. Doctors are well paid. I mean, it's interesting because there's all sorts of myths here about Canadian health care, and I can't answer all of them now. But the point is that that the system is rational, and it is accountable to the public. So when people are concerned if there are delays in elective surgery, there's pressure, and the government tries to find better ways of organizing things. And instead, the health care is managed by the provinces. So that's also an advantage because provinces can learn from one another's experience as well.
Let me throw one specific criticism at you. This comes from David Graetzer, who you may know. He's a former Canadian physician now at the Manhattan Institute think tank here in New York. And he writes in their publication, The City Journal, about problems that he sees. For example, some people in the ER had waited 5 days, and so private clinics have been opening at a rate of one a week in Canada. He references Brian Day, the new national president of the Canadian Doctors Association, who he says used to be a socialist and has become the most vocal critic and has opened his own private surgery practice to try and deal with the long waits. Fair criticisms?
Well, I think it's a weighted criticism. I think that there are certainly problems in Canada, and the governments try to deal with them. But it's interesting because for years the Canadian Medical Association at its annual meeting would vote on whether they wanted to create a two-tiered system, in other words, a private and a public system,
right.
And they would always vote against it. So. And they are. We don't have socialized medicine in Canada. The doctors don't work for the government. They're paid fee for service. I think we need, you know, constantly to try and upgrade and fix things. And yes, there are places where there are unacceptable delays. There are other places where there aren't delays at all. So, but if you compare that to the healthcare system in the United States, where, you know, millions of people, almost 60 million people, I think, are not insured at all. Many are underinsured, where you can actually lose your insurance, where there's a cap. I mean, in Canada, you know, that's just inconceivable. In the United States, the most common cause for personal bankruptcy is health care expenditures. That's unknown in Canada.
And that has to be where we leave it today. The former Prime Minister of Canada, Kim Campbell, and the current Foreign Minister of Liberia, Olubanke King Akarele, are both here for the Women's Leadership Summit on Global Security. Thank you both very much for coming on with us. We'll be looking to see what the summit comes out with.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, we continue our November series on the most important primary you probably know little about, the South Carolina primary, including today, misconceptions that New Yorkers have about politics in the South. Stay tuned.